This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. Rebranding Safety is the YouTube channel and podcast doing exactly what it says on the tin. We're here to challenge the perception of health and safety, and we do that right here on the podcast. We do that YouTube as well. So if you're new here, hit those subscribe buttons and all that bloody, bloody, blah. Today is the first episode of our quarterly co-host. Let's jump into the intro and I'll tell you some more about it.
The problem in safety isn't deviation, it's complexity.
Health and safety has gone mad.
Health and safety is trying to unpick having gone mad in the past.
There's no one solution and one problem. The problem is that we are looking for one solution.
Does the structure of the team allow them to flourish?
Feel safe enough to be uncomfortable.
The environment defines our behaviors.
People aren't the problem, they're the solution.
Rebranding Safety, crushing a stereotype. Brought to you by Risk Fluent.
What's up, peeps? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety. This is the first episode of the quarterly co-host. And before we get into it, I just want to give you a quick word from our sponsors. This episode is sponsored by Project Meletium. Project Meletium is the community for health and safety / risk professionals. If you want to drive your personal and professional development up the wazoo, then Project Meletium is a place for you, whether it's the weekly community calls, the monthly book club, or the outstanding quarterly wagon wheel. It's got everything for you. So go to www.projectmeletium.com, click on the sign up button, and that's it. You're in. But if you want to try it out for free first, that's fine. Just drop me a DM and I'll get you in on one of the calls. Otherwise, let's jump into today's content. So today is the first segment of the quarterly co-host, and our quarterly co-host this quarter is the amazing Laura Alcott. If you don't know who she is, where have you been for your entire safety career? She is well established in safety specialist recruitment. She's very prominent on social media, particularly LinkedIn. So like I say, if you don't know who she is, where have you been? Laura and I have put together a great little mini series of three episodes talking to CEOs, MDs, you know, proper business leaders to try and understand what they think about safety, what are the challenges they have on the board, how do they view safety and how do they manage safety and what does that look like for them from the eyes of a CEO. So for the next three episodes, you're going to hear about safety through the eyes of a CEO. I won't introduce Laura or our guest today. I'm going to let Laura do that in the segment. So let's jump into the content.
Great.
We are recording. Welcome to the podcast, Laura and Janet. Laura, you're our first quarterly co-host, so
I'm honored.
This will either go horrendous or really, really well. If it goes horrendous, we'll just nip it in the bud at Q1.
It'll be my fault you never do this again. Sorry.
Yeah, that's it, Janet. You're the tester. So it's all on you. No pressure. Laura, do you want to introduce yourself as a kind of quarterly co-host and your plan for the next three shows, and then introduce Janet?
Yeah, absolutely. So, thank you so much, James, for letting me do this. Very brave of you, I think, letting me take over this for the quarter. But for those of you that don't know me, I'm Laura. I'm an associate director over at HSE Recruitment. You know, we do what it says on the tin. We're a health and safety recruitment company. So I've been in the industry for, 11 years now for my sins. And obviously I spend most of my time speaking to health and safety people. And it's the thing I love most about the role, hearing all the innovative stuff that you guys are doing in the industry and sharing best practice. What I wanted to do with these three episodes of the podcast is just something a little bit different. And look at it from a slightly different angle, I think, to what we normally do. If you have spoken to me or met me over the last few years, you will know how passionate I am about getting safety professionals to brand themselves properly so that they can really grow in their career, so they can climb the ladder. And I think over the last decade, we've done that really, really well. The safety professional has changed. We've definitely stepped away from that clipboard mentality. You know, we're becoming much more engaging. We're definitely thinking about the way we are perceived in the marketplace. But I still think there's a way to go with that. And one of the things that probably, you know, in my perspective would help that is getting much more involved with board level stuff, speaking to people at C-suite level, really truly understanding a company and the challenges, because it's all very well and good us understanding health and safety, but if we know nothing else outside of that, I still think there's only so far we can go. So we've actually got a sister company called Network HR, who they recruit health HR professionals. And, you know, HR people are really good at doing this, at branding themselves, at climbing the ladder. And then we're seeing them get into board level positions. And I just don't quite understand why we're not seeing that at the moment from health and safety people. So I was hoping, yeah, by having chats with CEOs and people at that level, we could maybe get some tips and we can get people climbing the ladder and you know, moving into those sorts of roles. So Janet is our guinea pig for this episode. So Janet and I actually met at a public speaking course. So we're really testing what we learned there. But Janet, I thought I'd actually just let you introduce yourself and tell us a bit about you. And
thank you. Yeah. So no pressure. But my name is Janet Hawke, and I'm the chief executive of an organisation called Why People, which is a charity based in Scotland. And we're a company limited by guarantee, but we're also a charity. And the focus of the work of Why People is around supporting people who are going through a really difficult time. And in particular, we have an emphasis on supporting people experiencing homelessness and trying to get them back on the ladder towards their permanent home. And also children and young people who, and their families, who might benefit from mentoring or counselling services, either in a school setting or a community setting. So that's my role just now. My background would be, I have always been within the public sector or the third sector. I knew that I wanted to serve. That was my kind of driver from an early age. I am an accountant by qualification. So similar to you're saying about the HR professionals, I think accountants can sometimes be quite good at kind of positioning themselves in that from the finance perspective. But I've got, I went through my accountancy qualification through the NHS and then local government. And I spent about 17 years in local government before tentatively coming into the charity sector through a charitable leisure trust that was created by the local authority. And that really gave me the opportunity to expand my role. So rather than being finance only, it was that broader role of HR, IT, kind of corporate services, if you like. And so that was both a broader role, but also a charity. And from that, I just loved being in a charity. I loved the purpose, being driven by purpose. And after 5 years with that organisation, I moved into another charity, what I called a real charity. So it was a charity that really focused on fundraising and was driven by individuals who chose to give their time and effort and, towards that charity. And that was an international charity that fed children in the place of education. So they were feeding, I think today it's about 1.5 million children every single day. So that was an amazing time of my life, an amazing time of my career. But it, huge learning, huge opportunities for growth. And again, I grew into a COO role and then into a CEO role within that charity. And then in January of last year, I joined Why People as chief executive 3 months before the pandemic hit. So it was a bit of an interesting time to join. And I've been there for the last year.
That's a trial by fire, that joining just before the before the pandemic.
I got 3 months at least.
That was really interesting what you said, actually, because I didn't know you came from an accountancy background. And you're right, the accountancy route really does lend itself quite well to C-suite. You know, we see that very often, people going through accountancy into CFO and then across to CEO. And like I said, it's just not something we necessarily see from the safety market. And I've never quite understood why. I think, you know, when you become a leader in health and safety, you are a true leader in a lot of senses of the words, but then it just doesn't seem to be that next level. And I think one of the issues that we do find in the safety professional is even just trying to get a place on the board to start with. You know, that's probably one of the hardest bits, is getting in front of the board and actually speaking to them. I mean, from sort of a general perspective, from your accountancy background and from your actual, you know, CEO background, do you think there are particular skills that you need to get into C-suite level? Is there, you know, a certain type of person that it fits best? Or?
I don't know that it's necessarily a type of person, but it's interesting because I think what you said about HR and finance, I think those are well-established functions within a company, within an organisation. And often it's kind of acceptable, that's not the right word, but, you know, it often happens that those people will move into a broader role. So finance, it's so common that suddenly you get IT, suddenly you get HR, and suddenly you're the kind of corporate services. So that happens often. I think, to me, the technical skills aren't as important as the personal skills to think about that board level. I think it is about having a real passion for what you do and a determination to do things well. And again, my experience would be, I would always be the person putting my hand up, you know, I'll do that, and really wanting to do more in every organisation I've been in. And I think that having the determination and I suppose the belief in what you're doing is a really important part. So again, I've definitely been in rooms where people have thought I'm a bean counter. You're the finance person, you're a bean counter, just sit in the corner. But you know, I have a real belief and a passion that what I was providing to the organisation and then the board was really important. And I think that's the same with safety. You know, it's a critical element of the business. It's a critical element of the organisation. And just having a real belief and that will have an impact on productivity. It'll have an impact on everything. It's not just about safety in a silo. It's the whole organisation. And certainly I would say that's definitely something that I believe strongly about. I was never someone who thought I'm a finance person. What I was doing was contributing to the delivery of the whole organisation. And so I think there's a mindset there as well, but also the understanding the place of safety, and it's not just pigeonholed it across the whole organisation.
Sorry,
James,
carry on.
No, it's all right. I wonder, like, I'm just sitting and listening, like, every profession has a brand, doesn't it? Like the bean counter thing you said about, that's really interesting. And do you know what? I'm so critical of people that have a perception of my, like, everything I do is the podcast and YouTube, it's all because of the brand that we have. Yeah. I feel it doesn't connect with actually what we do as a profession. But I would probably be fair to be accused of being a hypocrite on the point that I would sometimes been caught to go, bloody finance, there's just such bean counters. And I think when you said that, I was like, oh shit, you know, that's caught me out, actually, that has. And I think that I'm literally just thinking of this now, like, as I look at that board, you know, like you said, finance is pretty much the CFO, that's a nailed on seat on a board.
Yep.
Yeah.
That is nailed on. That's never changed. I don't think I've ever worked for a company that didn't have a CFO.
Yeah.
HR, pretty much a nailed on seat, if I'm honest. And obviously CEO is some form of director of operations, normally a pretty much nailed on seat. And then be it marketing and sales, pretty much a nailed on seat. Now, if I look at all of those, for me, maybe HR might fall in the same bag as health and safety. Sometimes we get rolled in together. But if I look at all of the other roles, very clear role, very clear kind of potential and delivery and measurements and stuff like that. We know what a CFO can bring to us to benefit the company, you know, count the beans, so to speak, make sure that, you know, we're making profit and so on and so forth. Operations, make sure we're doing what we need to do, getting people in the right place, right time, so on and so forth. Marketing and sales, you know, they're very easy to work out what that, for someone that doesn't know what the ins and outs of finance,
yeah.
I can look at finance and know what they're doing.
It's well defined, yeah.
Yeah, that's a much better way of putting it. It's well defined. I don't think that's the case for safety. I think that one of the biggest problems we have in safety is that actually a lot of people that don't do safety don't actually realize what it is that we could do. Or maybe the best word is potential. Like, you understand the potential of a good CFO. You understand the potential of a good sales or a marketeer.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand the potential of a good safety professional? Yeah. And that's not a question for you, Janet, unless you want to answer it, because that's a very big question. But it just, that's what my thought process was going as you were speaking.
I completely agree with you. Completely agree with you. And that's why the personal branding stuff I talk about all the time, that's why I think it's so important, because until people understand the true role of a safety professional, I don't think we can have that interaction. I don't think we can have that seat on the board, that really, really defined role, because all the work we've done in health and safety to change the perception, it's great. You know, we all pat ourselves on the back all the time. We've done a really, really good job. But all you have to do is take a look at, you know, the Daily Mail and their health and safety articles, just to show that most people still don't get it. They think that health and safety people are here just to stop you having fun, shut it down, that's it. So there's definitely a disconnect between what we see internally as our role and what everybody else probably sees.
But I would maybe come in there to say, I think there's real synergies with health accountancy, because that's the one I'm closest to. But I think the same could be said of finance professionals. You know, some people think that we're just there to put up barriers. We're just there to say, well, you're over budget, so don't spend any more money. Or, you know, it's about the negative side of it. But I've always believed that there's so much more to finance. So it is about, I wouldn't have called it a personal brand, but certainly understanding your role and understanding the importance of it and presenting that in a way that's helpful. You know, we're here to actually enable you to do your job, so you don't have to think about that.
Yeah.
So we do that for you, so that we can give you the assurance you need so that you can go on and do what you need to do. And I think that that's the same for safety. Do you know, without that safety professional doing their element of the work required for the business, for the organisation, then it would make all of our jobs much harder, because you would have to incorporate it in a different way. So really interesting. I hadn't thought about it from the perspective of a safety professional, but certainly I've experienced it as a finance professional.
That's really interesting the way you put that. That's got my brain ticking now, actually. Like,
I can see your brain ticking, James.
They're all business risk areas, aren't they? If you think about it, no sales, business risk, you know, bad finance, business risk. Mm-hmm. So I kind of come back to the same question then. And again, this is not a question for us to answer, but maybe one for us to just generally chew the fat on it. Like, why is it then that safety really struggles to get on the board? You know, if finance still struggle with the exactly same brand as what we have, really, which is we exist to stop you doing what you're doing, which is not true. And then maybe the other side of it is that we exist just to make sure we're compliant. And that's a really easy part. When you would actually look at what we do, and there is some context to this, like, Janet, from a non-safety professional, we're kind of going through a bit of an identity crisis now as a profession. We're trying to work out who we are ourselves. Like, there is a lot of kind of safety bean counters, essentially, that kind of count the checklists and go one checklist, two checklists, great, thank you very much. And we're kind of shifting over to understand that this is more about people, more of a people-centered approach, more of a psychological understanding, behavioral understanding, and so on and so forth. So there's context to that as well. But when I look at this, I'm just like, what is it that's making... Why are CEOs not turning around and looking at safety and going, that's what I need on my board? I can't get an answer to that question.
Well, again, from my perspective, if I was looking at the board, it would be almost like combining safety with quality and it's ensuring that we're delivering the best possible services and ensuring the safety of everybody that we're supporting. So safety, and it's a bit that kind of discrete siloed approach. It's not that. It's safety in the context of delivering quality services and ensuring that we deliver the best services. So it comes into that kind of operations space for me, but I know that might be different in different organisations, but for me it would be that with a specific emphasis. So I've definitely sat in organisations where there's been a dedicated subcommittee for health and safety. Mm. And if it was a high-risk organisation where there's like the leisure sector or something like that, where there's real risks in operations. And I've seen that work really, really well. But if I think of the person that was on the board, it wasn't necessarily a safety professional. It was more of someone with business experience and operating an organisation, running an organisation. So
interesting.
Again, I'm just sharing some experience that I've had in that.
There's definitely something there with the holistic thing. And, you know, that's something we're seeing more and more with a lot of our clients is not seeing safety as this defined thing, but seeing it as a holistic business proposition. And that to me absolutely is going to open it up to the board, to that C-suite level stuff going forward. Because like we were talking about, when you look at the board, you've got your sales and marketing, there's a defined risk there. You've got finance, there's a defined risk there. But that all comes under a banner of risk. It's just different types of it, isn't it? It's financial versus reputational versus, you know, actual people risk. So we're definitely seeing a trend towards that. And that for me, I think, is very exciting, because that seems to suggest that we are going in the right way and people are seeing the benefit of us as a profession at that sort of level. I mean, James, you might have a different opinion because you're a safety person, but, you know, how do you feel about the holistic side of it? Is that something you are into at all?
You've asked a question that really the answer depends on what day of the week it is. Like, I kind of...
Right, okay, yeah.
We should be like 100% just committing to the title of health and safety and just changing how people perceive it. And we do that by changing our actions and being better ourselves, essentially kind of being the change we want to see, so to speak. And then some days I'm like, are we hindered by the perception of that title? And is it time to just move on from that? Like, and it just really depends, because sometimes I'm like, no, safety works. And then sometimes I'm like, you know what, head of operational risk and resilience would work a lot better. Head of operational risk and organizational learning. You know, there's lots of little titles out there that I think really complement what we actually do. What we're really good at is learning, understanding people and how they behave, and managing risk. They're the three things that we're really good at. And there's probably loads of people out there that go, oh, you forgot this, you forgot that. But the only thing that sits uncomfortable with me with risk is exactly what we just kind of said, is that the term risk covers so much.
Yeah.
So if you have a director of risk on your board, well, Jesus, that's just the CEO. Are the director of risk, aren't they? So everything in a business is risk. People is a risk, lack of marketing and bad marketing is a risk. You know, I was listening to a great podcast this weekend, Cautionary Tales, and they were talking about the jewelry guy that did that keynote speak, and then his business went bust like a month later. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, I didn't see that one.
It was years and years and years and years ago, but he went on, and he basically, it's a fascinating podcast. They're not actually talking about this, but they were talking about like planning and not planning. And anyway, but this guy, I can't remember his bloody name now. It's left my brain, but essentially he goes into this kind of dinner keynote at like some real prestigious hall in London, like top end, real like, talking to a load of really rich people that all of us can only ever aspire and dream to be. And he just mocks his products. He just mocks all of his products. He's like, we sell a book that not really a book. It's just a diamond book, blah, blah, blah. What a load of crap. And he just mocks all of his products and he's pretty brutal. And the audience loved it and blah, blah, blah. And anyway, but the newspapers picked that up and said, you're mocking your customers who are mid working to middle class that get to buy these things and they love your products and you're mocking them. Actually, what he was doing was mocking the audience. If you listen to the entire speech, he was mocking the audience, saying, you think that you're better than us, but I'm making a load of money selling this stupid stuff. Right. And but the media took it the other way, and he lost all of, he got sacked from his own company. Like, his name was the name of the company. And anyway, my point is, that's a business risk. Bad marketing or misinterpreted keynotes, communications, that's a business risk. So if we were to put safety into a more general risk position, it's like, oh, where does our scope end? So that's the kind of balls I juggle when I have these conversations. I think you need to call it operational risk, because frankly, I didn't train for the last God knows how many years to take on finance and stuff like that. I don't want to, and I shouldn't, because I don't understand that. But I can, you know, I can do a hell of a lot of stuff that will really benefit the company, but it's kind of like business ergonomics. It's understanding how a business and a human fit together. That's essentially what we do. So put that in a title.
I mean, I think it's a really good point, though, what you said about understanding a business. That's a really big thing for me, and something that I think we need to focus on more, because, again, we get so tied up into the, you know, the safety of the people and what we do day to day. If we are ever going to look at stepping up into that C-suite, we have to understand the bigger picture. That's a really, really important thing, because I imagine that the challenges that, you know, CEOs are facing, you know, they're oftentimes things we may not have even considered. They're completely different to things that would be on our sort of radar. I mean, I don't know if you'd agree with that, Janet, if there, you know, there's pressures we haven't even thought of.
Well, again, just that point, if you asked me what would be the skills you would want to see from a health and safety professional? Number one would be understanding the business.
Really?
Absolutely, 100% would be the very first thing. Clearly, we want technical competence. We expect that. That's a given. So in the same way, an accountant, you expect them just to be able to know how to count the beans and do what they need to do. But
we're going to get sued by accountants after this.
I know, sorry. I'm allowed to say it because I'm one. It would absolutely be understand the business. And then I would say also being practical rather than theoretical. Again, I've maybe come across in the past where it's a bit more kind of theoretical, or this is what the textbook says and this is what you should do. But being able to apply everything within the context of the business, within the context of the day-to-day, this is what we do. I think being able to move, and again, I see so many synergies between finance, because as I say, you can be in a box and just doing your thing in a spreadsheet, or you can be in the organisation and saying, all right, okay, I could do this and that could help you.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely that.
I love that. Yeah. Practical. Like pick up the message. That is such a good message to the safety, any safety professional listening to this, like pick up the annual business report and read it, understand the finance, understand where the pressures are, because actually it's going to help you do your job as well. It gives us a bit of empathy. We can see the business is not doing very well. So when finance department go, you're not having budget for that, then, you know, we understand it then. Also, it helps us, it would also help us to be able to, when we're doing those risk assessments and we say, oh, we want this gold standard of safety, we go, well, have you read the annual report this year? We're not doing great. Do you know what I mean? Look at the forecast for next year. So maybe let's rein this back. What's our priority right now? This is. So rein this in and let's go with that. And there's nothing wrong with that, I don't think. I actually think it's a benefit. So I think that's such a good bit of advice there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it definitely is something that, you know, I'm not necessarily a direct safety professional. I work within the industry, but it's something I've learned throughout my career as I've wanted to progress, that there was no progression for me without understanding the business. That it just wasn't possible for me to be able to get into a, you know, associate director role. I had to sit down and, yes, study the P&L and work out why we made the decisions that we did. And all of a sudden, this whole new business world opens up to you that I didn't even know exists. So
I think a big part of that is understanding different priorities, right? Yeah. So a CEO, I mean, I've never been a CEO, so correct me if I'm wrong, Janet, but, you know, a CEO priority is keeping that business going, you know, to keep that business going, keep everybody in the job, make some profit. They have legal duties to act in the best, in the benefit of the shareholders and so on and so forth, right? So, and safety professionals need to understand that. And that's one of my biggest problems with Safety First. Like, we talk about safety first. It's not safety first. Like, safety, I don't want to work for a company that's safety first, and I'm a safety professional, because if it's safety first, we're going to go bust.
Yeah. You've got a job in.
You just do nothing.
Yeah, you just do nothing.
The thing is just to sit in your room and do nothing.
Exactly.
And if it was, and then you're safe.
Exactly. We wouldn't have rock climbing. We wouldn't have rugby. We wouldn't drive. Yeah. We wouldn't do absolutely anything if it was safety first. So we kind of, And I think this is changing. I think we are moving away from that kind of thing, but understanding that sometimes not like better is better than best is a saying I stole off one of my members the other day, which is outstanding. Yeah, it's really good. And it actually, thinking of this and thinking of Janet, where you work and helping homeless people, I have such a good story, which I'll keep very short, that kind of just says that so well. I used to work for a housing association, and in that housing association in my area that I manage, we had a vacant property, and we had this vacant property for so long, and it was coming up to winter, and we had somebody within the company basically had a conversation with a homeless charity and said, look, it's vacant. Why don't you as a charity rent it off us for a very low price, and you can use it for the homeless people over the winter. So they were like, oh God, yeah, great idea. Yes, let's do that. We'd offered them like a really favorable rate, really low rate. And yeah, that was it. And I didn't really know anything about it until I got an email off the executive director of operations. Now, I'm just a regional manager at this company. So if I get an email off the exec director of operations, I'm like, I'm fired. I'm fired. I've done something. This has been coming, James. You knew it was coming. So I read the email, and she basically like, this charity have complained because this has been going on so long, and they're desperate to get these people into somewhere to stay. But everyone keeps saying it's not safe. It's not safe. It's not safe. Right. And when I said, give me the safety professional that tells me it's not safe. And they didn't have an answer for it. Now, okay, I think operational people, they're competent. They know when something's safe or not safe. So I'm not saying you always need a safety professional. That's not the point of my story. But my point was, okay, fine. I'll go and talk to the operational team. Let's work out how we can get this done, because I want to see these homeless people in this property, especially over winter. And we need to do this ASAP because it's getting cold quick. So we go in there, right? What have we got? Well, there's no fire risk assessment. Okay, fine. I can sort that. I can do that today. There's no legionnaire risk assessment. All right, that's not too bad. We can fix that, but we can arrange a risk assessment later on, blah, blah, blah. So what can we do now that gets these people in? I can smash out a risk assessment, do a fire risk assessment, did one on the day. Here's a must have, and then the rest are can wait. Must have was the alarm was buggered. Get a guy in to fix that tomorrow, and we're off. I flushed all the water systems. We were gone. Awesome. Wrote a report to the exec director saying, all we need to do, get this alarm fixed and we can get those people in. Off we go. We can get that alarm fixed within a week. EGP, she was like, yes, thank God. And that was it. End of story. I was done until January time, where I ended up just going back to that same property, which is like a collection of properties. And I was like, oh, how did it go getting those people? Oh, they never went in. You are.
Oh my God.
You what? They never went in. What? I mean, I literally slogged it for like 2 days to get you to be able to do that, which is so nice for a safety professional. Like, I'm able to try and help you do something. And long story short, it got stuck at legal because they said somebody needs to flush the taps for legionnaires. And I'm like, what do you employ me for if I've just told you you don't need to flush the taps? But the main point here was, do you think that homeless person cares that you haven't flushed the taps? They'd probably rather risk Legionnaires' disease than sleep on the street for the whole of winter. And it was just an eye-opening experience for me to be able to go, sometimes safest is not the best.
Yeah, completely agree. That's a brilliant story. And yeah, I think it details it perfectly. You see it quite a lot when we speak to people in like the leisure and the events industry, that it's, like you said, it's not always about getting everything perfectly right, because, you know, if you're putting a play on and as part of that play, someone needs to get set on fire, look, that's never going to be safe, is it? that just isn't, but it has to happen. So you're just finding ways to make it happen. So yeah, whoever you stole that mantra off, the what was it, better?
Better is better than best.
Yeah, I'm stealing that as well.
Shout out to Peter Jenkins who gave me that.
So I tend to agree with that, but that to me is where the quality comes in. So that's about quality standards. So that's a decision that organisation had to make around whether it was willing to risk. So yeah. I would never put someone in if there was a real risk of Legionnaires' disease.
Yes.
But again, it's the context of it and understanding, is there a real risk there? And do we really think that it's something that we should hold back? And then you brought in another profession there around the legal profession and their view on things. But it's all about it's all about risk. Mm. It's all about doing the best for the people we're trying to serve on that day. And if there's someone experiencing homelessness and they need for a home, then that's what our priority should be. It is about people. And you've mentioned that a few times, James. I would agree with that completely. We're not here. Everything that we're doing is about people. And it's about keeping our people safe, whether that's staff and volunteers, or keeping the people that we're serving, the people that we're supporting, and keeping them safe. And how do we do that? So is it safer for that person to be in a flat that potentially hasn't got one of them, the multiple checks that they should have? And just to be clear, we do have all the checks in place. Is top of our priority, because I would never put anyone anywhere that I wouldn't go myself. Do you know, if I'm not willing to stay in it, no one that you're supporting will stay in it either. But again, it's that safety aspect, or is it, or would they still be without a home, whether it's in the street or at a friend's house, sofa sort of thing, or whatever they're doing. And it's understanding that. And again, think back to the safety professional and what they do in our organisation, and in many, many organisations, you know, it's from a risk assessment, which could be about one individual. It'd be a risk assessment about one individual that we're working with, and how you like link that whole thing back to organisational strategic risk. And that's an exercise that we're certainly working on just now within my people. How do we get that balance between the day-to-day risk assessment process that's fundamental? We can't operate without it. That's the basic requirement. And then linking all that, so there's that clear line of sight between that and the overarching strategic risks of the organisation and how we're mitigating them all. That's a big exercise we're looking at just now.
I think a lot of us could learn from the creative industry, which Laura just kind of touched on. One of my mentors is from the creative industry, and there's a reason for that, because, you know, they get knocked on the door. Hi, we'd like to kill someone today, please. Can you tell us how we do that? You know,
I'm going
like
to throw someone out of a plane. You just get on board, don't you?
Exactly. And you've got to be a different kind of safety professional to go, cool, let's see how we can kill someone today. You know what I mean? But if you look at the, I interviewed Dominique, who's the head of safety for the Royal Opera House.
Oh, yeah.
And she had a real challenge around noise at work. And we had a very brief conversation around some of the work she'd done around. They actually kind of moved over to risk benefit analysis, not risk assessments. I think they still do risk assessments as well, but they had risk benefit analysis, so they could clearly see this is the risk, but what's the benefit in one thing. So if we were to apply that to my story, it was like the risk was catching Legionnaires. What's the risk? Quite low, but what's the benefit? Getting this poor gentleman or lady off the street where they're going to catch pneumonia, which ironically is a form of Legionnaires, is a form of pneumonia. So that would have been ironic.
Is it? I didn't actually know that.
I think so. Even though someone's going to tell me, no, you're really wrong now. And I might be wrong, but I'm sure it's a form of pneumonia. You know, getting abused, getting whatever, you know what I mean? And when you look at it and you go, risk versus benefit, easy decision. Easy decision. But sometimes I think safety professionals, and it's not their fault, like we're so ingrained through the way we're trained and the way we're raised to look at negative, 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 we become inherently risk averse, which doesn't risk work in reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And just on that, the kind of risk assessment, again, we within our organisation are trying to change the language around that as well, because again, it's about people, you know, it's not about a risk assessment, that's a checklist that you have to do. It's about keeping someone safe. So it's a keeping you safe form, like how do we complete this? And then it would bring in those points of reason, James, you know, what's the safest thing for that person that we're trying to support today? Is it for them to be in that home, or is it to be wherever they were prior to that?
And I think the context of the person. What I like about that, Janet, is I think the title of that is a very strong statement. Like you're, and then hopefully you've thought of this, but like your employees, you know, if you went with a title, could hold you to account to that. You know, we finished this form, we finished this process, whatever that looks like. They could quite easily turn around and say, well, it's called keeping you safe, and I don't think you're keeping me safe, because actually safe is a very relative term. And what I think is safe is completely different to you and everyone. So I like that about that. I think it would be a really big challenge, but I'm interested to see how that goes.
Absolutely. But again, doing it together, you know, it's not done to someone. It's not me saying how I'll keep you safe. It's us sitting together and saying how will we keep you safe? Yeah. And let's agree that together. And that context will be different for every individual. You know, there might be someone who says, no, I'm safer where I am, or someone says that, no, I'm safer in that home.
Exactly. So don't do safety to them, do safety with them. That's it. You nailed it. Right. Anyway, Laura, I knew we were going to go down a rabbit hole on that first one.
We always do. It's fun.
I knew it. I'll let you carry on.
Yeah, there's loads of interesting things that have come out of that. But, you know, one of the things we were saying is, yeah, as a safety professional, the important thing is understanding the challenges of the business. And, that, you know, that's how we went down the rabbit hole into what's important, what's the risk benefit. I mean, have the challenges of running a company changed because of the pandemic, the dreaded C word? I don't know if I should even bring it up, to be honest. But, I mean, has that impacted stuff for you?
Well, clearly, we definitely can't ignore the pandemic. None of us can ignore what's happened. As I mentioned, I only started in this organisation 3 months before the pandemic hit. So certainly my pre-pandemic experience was very limited. But I would say, obviously, it's changed what we do. Like everybody in the whole country, we had to quickly adapt and rethink how we were delivering services. I'm delighted to say that almost all of our services we continue to deliver. That's brilliant. It was just they were different. You know, it was online rather than in person, and we were looking at new technology and how we could apply that. But we're able to continue to do everything. But I do think it's maybe not changed what the challenges are, but it's accelerated some and slowed down others. So when I came into this role, I'd been speaking to the board beforehand, and one of the key things we wanted to do was look at our long-term strategy. And last year we thought we were going to go through a strategic exercise and we were going to come up with a new plan for the next 5 years. that was slowed down, because there's no point until we understand you know, the impact of COVID. So that was slowed down. We are doing it this year, but you know that as we start to recover out of the COVID situation, then we'll be thinking about our plans from next year onwards. But we can push that back. But meanwhile, what we probably accelerated was safety. So maybe we've employed an in-house health and safety professional now, which we didn't have before. We had outsourced services. So we brought that in, and there's been a real focus on, we've created an audit and risk committee. We've engaged the health and safety professional. We've got a focus on risk and looking at a whole risk framework for the organisation, really thinking, again, that it's meaningful. It's not just an exercise that you do once a year or once a quarter or whatever it is, but it's actually a really worthwhile tool for every single person in the organisation. And that's why it's got to go from those keeping you safe forms all the way up to strategy. As I say, a big exercise, it's not completed yet, but it's something that's really important to make sure that it's not seen that safety sits here. And then we all do our thing here. Safety is right across everything, as you've been saying, and risk, sorry, sits across absolutely everything. But it's managing it. It's life is about risk. Life is about you know, we need to be able to manage it.
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you use the word accelerate several times, because that's definitely how it's felt, hasn't it? It has been foot to the floor for the last 12 months. I think every company that I've dealt with, including ourselves, it has accelerated our plans. You know, Things have changed so much quicker than we ever could have anticipated, but that's then brought up risks of its own. You know, one of the major things that we're trying to cover ourselves internally is, you know, this pandemic completely accelerated our flexible working, you know, our culture of you can work where you want, when you want, as long as you get the job done. But because it's happened so much quicker than we were prepared for, it's then brought in these other safety risks of mental health issues and you know, how you actually turn off when you're working from home and all this other stuff we hadn't necessarily anticipated. So, yeah, it's felt full on, hasn't it, for the last 12 months?
I think, go on, Janet.
Sorry, I was just going to say, in terms of well-being and mental health, that is absolutely what I would say one of the top priorities for us. If I was asked the top two or three challenges or priorities, it would be, obviously we're doing a strategic exercise, which is great, but well-being of our people is right up there. It's got to be. And that's, again, our people, our staff, our volunteers, but also the people we're supporting. How can we, our services have to adapt to deal with what is inevitably been happening for people over the last 12 months, and this feeling of release. Suddenly we can go out and we can actually go out and socialise again. You know, that can bring real challenges to people. Yeah. That's not always a positive, you know. So it's how do we manage all that? The well-being is hugely important.
I hope that we ride the wave and we come out the other end with the right lessons learned. I think there are a few lessons that we can learn out of this. I'm just concerned that there's a couple of really crap lessons that you'll think are lessons, but they're really not. And then there's some really good lessons that you can learn here. Like I've had some conversations, you know, people saying, oh my God, you know, we're so much safer. You know, we've had less accidents. And I'm like, less people at work, mate.
Yeah,
like,
there's nobody on site.
Yeah. And then people are like, oh, well, you know, we're so much more productive. We've got half the member of staff that we normally have. And I'm just like, just calm down, because you know we're in a state of resilience, and when people are in a state of resilience, they can work harder, they push themselves, and they keep going because people are so grateful to have a job right now, or maybe more so in the mid of this process, as fingers crossed come out the tail end of it now. But it's you know, they're in this state of resilience and they're grateful for a job, so they're working hard. And I do think us Brits especially, we do kind of come to, well, 9 times out of 10, we come together and we kind of just go, let's just get through this. And I think we've seen that. I just hope that at the end of it, the lesson we learn is not, oh, look, we can do more with less. And the lesson we learn is that if it wasn't for our people, we would not have survived this. And it was our people that got us through this.
Absolutely, 100%. And when I said how we kind of decelerated, whatever the word would be, our strategic exercise last year, what we did instead was we came up with an 18-month plan just to see us through to next March. And that 18-month plan was based on two pillars. And the first pillar was the three R's. It was the recover, reflect, reform. But that reflect in the middle, you know, it's really, really important. We need to learn from this. Mm-hmm. So as we recover, we need to also reflect, and we need to reform. We need to really think about what we do at the end of this. So that's a pillar that still is running. And sitting alongside that was that kind of foundational piece, looking ahead. So in preparation for looking ahead post-COVID, it was pillar two, which is our people, our processes and our priorities, really. And that was coming from our people being exactly as you say, James. You know, we can't do this without our people, and we really need to, we thought about capacity, we brought in new roles, we focused on kind of structure, but also well-being. How do we support our people differently? We're still not there yet, like you, Laura. We're still working through kind of flexibility. What does it actually mean? And what policies do we need to have? And but then the last P being priorities, that was almost the, what do we need to say no to? Let's just be really clear what we need to do and what we don't need to do, and just start some things. and focused on that recover, reflect, reform. You know, we need our people, all people in every organisation, you know, fatigue is there. So we need that resilience to just say we can't rely on that forever. Hugely grateful for it, but we can't rely on that. We need to not ensure sustainable. That people are able to deliver this.
It's interesting, you've both mentioned this kind of flexible working thing, which I think is really interesting. I had an amazing conversation with Crystal Danbury. The other day, who's becoming very, very popular very, very quickly. And she is just such an amazing view on how she manages her team. And she just blew me away. She really did. But there was a few things that we were talking around that I can imagine would be really uncomfortable for companies. Like, essentially now we have an opportunity to completely review the way we define work.
Yeah.
What does work actually look like now? And actually that's really uncomfortable because we've previously managed our people on some very simple, tangible things. Mm-hmm. You turned up at 9, you went home at 5, and you didn't talk too much in the coffee room throughout that time whilst you were there. And you know, we kind of laugh at it, but that subconsciously, whether we did have the SMART objectives, that subconsciously is still in people's heads.
Yeah.
And you've turned up at 9 and people will still be doing it through this pandemic. They're working from home. I guarantee everyone's logging on at 9, even though actually maybe 9 o'clock is not a good time for you.
Yeah.
And she gives such a good story about a lady that actually it worked around her day. She just could not work 9 to 5, but she could and liked to work first thing in the morning and quite late at night. And that was just how that just worked for her. And she had like naps or something in the day. And so she's sending emails at like midnight or something. And people are like, oh my God, you shouldn't be sending emails working at like, you're obviously stressed. You're obviously overworked. And she's like, no, this is just how it works for me because I'm not working throughout the entire day. So Crystal's view on it is like, I talk to her and I say, does that work for you? Is there anything you need from me? How can I help you? I want to make sure you're okay. But if that works for you, that's fine. And she's like, no, this works for me, blah, blah, blah. And just the story was just so beautiful. But I can just imagine how difficult that is for a manager to say, don't dictate the working time. Don't command and control like we have done for so many years. And give your people the resources, the tools, the competence that they need and enable them. Because trust me, people want to do a good job. And if you let them do it, they'll do it. And if they don't do it, they're not right for you. Yeah. And that's okay. So it's time to move on.
Yeah, we had exactly the same conversation last week when we were at board, and it was and that was basically where we came to is it's not a one size fits all. It just isn't for this sort of thing, because we were saying there's a lot of people, you know, within our work environment that are feeling the pressure working from home because they're not able to switch off. So, you know, one of my co-directors was saying, well, we can solve that. We can just say, right, you don't have your emails on your phone. You don't answer emails after 6 o'clock at night. And I said, whoa, hang on. Actually, that would really stress me out if I didn't have my emails on my phone. I like to check them. That's what keeps me calm is I know when I come into the office, I've checked everything. I know what's there. I know what I'm facing. If you strip that away from me, I don't think I could actually function. So it just can't be a one size fits all mentality, can it? Because we're not all the same. We're not.
Absolutely. And I suppose in our organisation, to pick up on the point you're making, James, it was recognising that. So if I get an email at 11 o'clock at night, I might want to respond to it. But it's again given permission to say, well, no, if that's not what you're working, don't feel obliged. So again, as a chief exec, I must confess that it's something I talk about a lot because I don't expect it. But sometimes if I sent an email, somebody would think, oh, I better respond to that.
Yeah.
But that's just because that might be a convenient time for me to send it. And I quite often keep them in my mailbox ready to go and then wait till the next day to send them because I don't want people to feel, oh, that's something I better answer quickly. But I think it's having that open conversation within the organisation to say, everyone's different, as you say, Laura. Everyone's got a different means of working. The challenge, though, why we're still working through this is because we've got some services that require people there 24/7, you know, there's accommodation services. And how do we get that real balance for our staff? Mm-hmm. So it's that everybody's got a degree of flexibility. It might just look different to some people. So it's the principles of flexibility. What is it we're trying to achieve through flexibility? It might not be that you're able to choose to work at midnight, because that's you might be on shift. You might have to cover a shift, which is this period. Really understanding that, and how do we make the principles of flexibility, which is we want to support our people, we want to be able to accommodate your personal life and your work life as best we can, but we still need to deliver a service. So how do we get that balance?
Well, I think that comes back to the same point, in that this is not a one-size-fits-all. There are, so your admin, your managerial types of roles, they probably fit really well to a kind of flexible working structure. But, you know, I look at my day job as the head of safety for the GGF, and, you know, most of our company could go, we're mostly admin and kind of technical support. We could all flip over to flexible working. But our members are majority in the day, 9 to 5. They're manufacturing, they're installers, they're working, you know, that 9 to 5 or kind of early morning if you're an installer, 3 till 4, 5 o'clock. So it is sort of dictated by that kind of what are you actually trying to achieve here? So there needs to be flexibility in the flexible approach in a way to still deliver what we're trying to deliver. But that conversation can be, okay, so, and I'm just thinking out loud for what I kind of do, but like, this is stuff that must be done in this kind of time frame. So answering a question from a member, for example, you know, or something like that, that's in that time frame. So it's kind of like, actually, the person's not flexible. It's kind of like the person's flexible and the structure's flexible, and they kind of just mold and weave, which is messy. It's really messy.
Yeah.
And I can imagine for a board, Janet, and yourself, actually, I think that you're probably aware of the term kind of psychological safety. Have you heard of that? The work from Amy Edmondson and all that? Or there was loads of people doing it before Amy Edmondson. People will be messaging me. But anyway, she's the one that got it famous. So and the interesting thing around this, I think, is that when you get like, in safety, there's this thing called New View, which is like a new way to look at safety, which I'm on the bandwagon 100%, right? But a big thing is about reducing the paperwork. So a lot of people read this book called The Safety Anarchist, right? Which is provocative for a reason. They read it and they read it, and then they go into work and they're like, right, we're going to burn all the paperwork. We're going to get rid of it. Rip it all up. This is not delivering safety, blah, blah, blah. And what they fail to remember is that paperwork delivers psychological safety for the board, because it tells them what's going on.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with the clocking in and out 9 to 5. It's the same thing with the SMART objectives. It's the same thing. It creates a sense of we're going in the right direction for the board. So it's kind of like, to your original point you said like nearly an hour ago, was we need a more holistic view on what we're trying to achieve here and how does it work for everyone, because this is about to get really messy if we do it right. But messy is not necessarily a bad thing, but it's change is hard is kind of what I'm saying. And I don't think anybody knows what this is going to look like. And that's a really good thing, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it can be seen that way, can't it? It's exciting times, but like I said, that comes with its own nervousness, doesn't it? There is so much change, and there's so many ways this could go right or it could go wrong. And it's about making sure we pick up the right lessons. Completely agree with that.
Absolutely, I agree too. But it's also, again, doing it with the right intent. So, you know, if we make mistakes, but it's learning from those quickly and be able to adapt quickly and not just trudging along thinking, okay, you know, we'll keep trying it for a wee bit longer and see if we get a different outcome, and really being adaptive to that. So I think that's really important as well. But yeah, change can be good. It's just the pace of change, and just with everything that's happened over the last year, just making sure that we're mindful of that.
I love what you said there. It's similar to a tagline that I got again at the weekend. I run a little side membership, and we run an event at the weekend. And the keynote was talking about a company you went to, and their tagline was, we fail fast or we fail quick. And I was just like, when he said that, he was like, I love that. And I was like, I love it even more. Like, you know, if you can fail quick and say, we failed, you know, move on, learn, move on. Like, that's just powerful to see from a company if they live it. But, you know, from a CEO's point of view, a chief exec's point of view, that's vulnerability that we talk about a lot, being vulnerable as a leader and saying, you know, it's a right to fail and admit that you can fail. I imagine that must be really hard to kind of overcome. Was that a natural transition? Were you like that all the time, or was that just something you were like, oh my God, this is really uncomfortable, and then you got it?
Definitely a natural thing for me to know it again. Even the fact that you've invited me on here as a chief exec, it's that imposter syndrome. No, I'm just a person who does a job, and I don't have all the answers. Absolutely not. Do I have all the answers? We all need good people around about us, and people that are. So that's why the role of the safety person, the role of the finance person, the role of the HR person. How we all need good people around about us. And admitting, I ask lots of questions. If you speak to anybody in my team, they'll tell you ask lots of questions. I like to try and understand things, but I definitely don't have all the answers. I think vulnerability is good. And it's very much in line with us. So again, maybe that's why I'm kind of attracted to the charity sector as well, because, you know, we're here to serve people. We're not here to do to people. So the same thing we've been talking about. We need to hear from them what they need and be able to adapt. So vulnerability is just inherent, certainly in me and in obviously everyone in our organisation. You know, we need to be open and transparent. Our values are at the forefront of everything we do. Reflective is one of our values. We want to learn. We want to know when we've got it right, when we've got it wrong.
I love that. I've got like one last question, actually. I've kind of taken over here a bit, Laura. I apologise.
It's fine. No problem. I'm enjoying the conversation, so crack on.
I think what I've seen companies do really well and some companies do not so well during this pandemic was really early on actually being vulnerable as a leader and saying, do you know what? Global pandemics are really new to me as well, and I don't have all the answers. Now, I understand you joined your company in this position only a few months ago, so maybe you weren't in that position when to enable you to do something like that. But I'll be interested on your kind of thoughts around that. If, you know, for me, I thought that would be really powerful to turn around and hear a leader say, you know what, I really don't have the answers here, but together I think we can do this. So I don't know, here's a channel that you can feed back to me. You know, I think it's Thames Water that did like a weekly call, which was just the boss and the board on a Zoom call with pretty much anyone that wanted to join. And it was like, here's the update from us. The rest was just open mic. Tell me what's going on. How are you? Which for me, I'm just like, wow, that's powerful. Yeah. That's really good. And that, you know, hopefully that CEO's taking a shed load of notes and then acting on it the next day. But I'll be interested on what your thoughts on that, on something like that would be.
Yeah. So certainly when this happened, communications became really critical, and there was much more frequent. So I was doing kind of weekly emails out to the teams. And it was, I don't know that I necessarily said, I don't have all the answers, but it was definitely around, so this is where we're at today, this is what we're planning, this is what we need to think about. But meanwhile, everything you're doing is, it was the teams, it was the staff who were keeping the services going, not me.
Yeah.
It was them, it was the being grateful for what they were doing on the ground and how they were adapting immediately to be able to continue to deliver services. And that did involve safety risk assessments or looking at safety and everything else, because they were having to change quickly into doing something entirely different. Then protocols were coming out for COVID and they were having to adapt to all of them. So it was definitely the communication was around, the subliminal message was, I don't have the answers, but you guys do, and you're doing it today, and make sure that you keep telling us about how we can learn from each other and share that. So we did have a few kind of drop-in sessions and different things, but it's keeping it going and making sure that, again, it's a balance between being vulnerable but giving reassurance We were on a past, you know, we knew it wasn't all, oh my goodness, we've got no idea what's happening here. It was, that wouldn't have been a great message to give, but it also wasn't true. It was, you know, one day at a time, let's get through this week. Let's focus on what we need to do now and let's plan for next week and make sure we're prepped for that and realign resources to make sure we're directing resources to where we need them. And that was definitely based on what we were hearing from the services. It wasn't based on us. Again, there used to be a term used, it still probably is, but the head office. But we've intentionally, there's no head office, you know, we're the support function, which is there to support all the services. So thinking about the redirecting the resources of the support functions out to where they were needed most, whether that was buying PPE or procuring things centrally to try and get it out to services. And it was all hands to the deck, and it was amazing how the staff responded, but that definitely wasn't about, it was about all of us. So I'm not saying I didn't have a role, I had a small role the same as everyone else, but it was definitely everybody pulling together.
I think that's a major learn for us as well, and something I think we really wanted to take forward with it. You know, speaking to a lot of my team and a lot of the other guys in the different offices that work with us, when the pandemic first happened, seeing our CEO having that vulnerability and having those open conversations, saying, look, we've got a strategy, we know what we're doing, we're keeping you as informed as we can, but yeah, it's scary, and just admitting that it was scary and it was challenging, that was eye-opening stuff. I think, you know, I always knew that he cared. I've worked with him for 11 years, but I think for some of the newer people, that was really, really powerful. And it's something we're really keen to make sure that continues. You know, we've opened up these great lines of communication now between the CEO and, you know, every single person in the business. And as much as I know, you know, he can't listen to us 24 hours a day forever, I want to make sure those lines of communication stay open, because it's so powerful. It's really changed the way we do things.
Absolutely. Wow. That was,
hearing you saying all that again, Laura. Just going to say the word vulnerability. So I would never describe it as being vulnerable. It's just being honest. Do you know? It's just being honest. I don't think it makes me vulnerable. I don't. That would mean I feel it's a threat or I feel something. But it doesn't make me vulnerable. It just makes me honest.
Yeah. And very good way of looking at it.
Everyone else is honest as well.
I love that. I love that. I think that's really powerful, actually. Yeah. Just honesty, isn't it? And trust as well. I think from the way you talk about it, you had a lot of trust in your team. You know, I think that's powerful to be able to turn around and say, you know what, like, tell me what you need, because I trust you to be able to get this done. And especially for your line of work, you know, your company, Janet, you know, the stuff that they're doing is you know, powerful, and it's impactful, isn't it, to the local community and to people. So, you know, being able to enable them and say, we trust you to be able to look after these homeless people and support them, you know, that's powerful, because I imagine a lot of people, they work there because they just love the fulfillment that gives them. So being able to hear from their leaders, we trust you to do it, that those two combined, you know, that's a recipe for awesomeness.
I would agree. As in the recipe for awesomeness within the staff team, absolutely. And the passion. So I used the word passion earlier, even when I was talking about as an accountant, having passion and belief in what you're doing. And I think that's so, so important in everybody in our organisation, and why people have real passion for what they do, regardless of what element of the organisation they're in. You know, they're all doing the same. They're all delivering that positive change in people's lives, I think, make a difference.
Yeah, definitely. Right, we have spoke for a very long time, and I need some dinner. I need some dinner, and I want to go see my little daughter. Yeah. I haven't seen her all day. So, unless there's any closing notes from anybody, anyone?
No, not particularly. I mean, I think we covered some great stuff in there. I mean, the things I'm definitely going to take away are those keywords of, like, yeah, the passion, the honesty, the communication. That's really, really big. And I think hearing those real life examples of how that's helped throughout something as tricky as the last 12 months. Yeah, this will really help me as a professional, and hopefully I'll help some of our listeners as well. Fingers crossed.
Awesome. Definitely. Janet, do you want to give a little shout out to your company just to kind of close us out and tell us like what they do?
I've mentioned them a few times. So Why People, you can certainly see us in find our website, whypeople.org.uk, and we deliver services across Scotland, as I've mentioned, focused on people who are experiencing homelessness, but also the preventive work through counselling and mentoring of children, some from care experience backgrounds are going through some difficult times. So yes, anyone that would like to find out more can go on our website and have a look.
Awesome. We'll put it in the show notes as well, so people can just go and click on that as well. Thank you very much, Janet, for your time. Laura, would you like to give a little shout out to your guys, and then probably tell us who we've got coming up next as well on the quarterly?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, obviously, as I said at the start, we do exactly what it says on the tin. We're, you know, a health and safety recruitment. We've been around for a really, really long time. Hopefully you guys know us. My big thing is I just like to talk to you all. You know, I love health and safety. We all love health and safety. So come and chat to us. Tell us what you're doing. Get involved. We're always doing this sort of stuff, podcasts and roundtables and things like that to really help us understand the industry. Coming up on the next podcast, we have got Richard Harrow from the Frozen Food Federation. So that'll be a really, really interesting one. I think quite a different company for us to have a look at. But yeah, Richard, really, really enthusiastic about health and safety, heavily involved in their safety AGMs and all of that. So it'll be a good conversation.
And another trade association. So I'm interested in talking to for my own.
You can compare notes.
Yeah, yeah. So how? Tell me how you did that. Word for word, how did you do that, please?
That's why I picked him, just for you, Dan.
Thank you very much. Right, thank you very much, both of you. That was a really interesting conversation.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, peeps, I hope you enjoyed that episode. That was episode one of our quarterly co-host. So there's two more to go with Laura. There's two more CEOs to go. So make sure you check the rest of the content out. They will consistently be on the last Monday of the month for the next 2 months. And then we'll move on to our next quarterly co-host. I hope you've enjoyed it, guys. I shall see you next week. Safe.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.